When someone we love passes away, we are left with grief and sadness. However, when Australians with disabilities lose their main carers or supporters, life becomes much more challenging, and sometimes it becomes hard to find services and guidance. An organisation is providing guidance and support to Australians with an intellectual disability who are in this journey. Powered Media's Emma Myers spoke with advocacy leader at Valid, Anthony Rizzoli, about the services available for adults with intellectual disabilities.
The first thing we did a few years ago is develop some easy read information around topics like what is grief, what is palliative care, and what is dying, and how does it look like, and things like that. So we developed these resources. It was co-designed by people with intellectual disabilities, and a group of them end up taking these resources and visiting people who live in disability group homes to talk about these issues. Part of the project was to do some training for staff to support people who work in disability group homes around the best supports they could give the people they work with around things like dying and getting counselling and things like that. And we're hoping that in the future we can go out to other people, not just staff and some people with disabilities that live in group home, but maybe supporting other people with intellectual disabilities, maybe if they live family or live on their own and things like that.
So what happens to adult children with intellectual disabilities after their support system goes away?
Most of the cohort that I work with, people with intellectual disability, they tend to go onto the NDIS and get ongoing support throughout their lives. Not everybody, but we'll say maybe a majority. And then within those supports, hopefully they get the right supports and it keeps going to the rest of their lives because they have a ongoing permanent disability. And in those supports, when the person has a change of life or change of circumstances, as they say in the NDIS, they look for the funding to support them. When it comes around things like death and dying and so on, it's important to continue that work where people are constantly being informed about what services are out there to support them when they're in this situation and if they need it. And one of the ways we try to work with that is to have any information in a way that people can understand. So we target it that way.
What about the emotional side? How do you explain to them that this is the situation that they're facing?
We've got information to support people to understand things like emotions. What is grief? What are some of the physical signs? What are some of the emotional signs? It's important to talk to someone you trust about it. So the whole idea is to speak up about your feelings. And I know for a lot of people that we work with that they may not have verbal communication, but it's important that the supporters also know about those signs and those physical things that people might go through, those emotional things. Sometimes it's trauma, of course, and have a good network of people around them to support them when they're going through something like that.
So what happens in the interim period?
We target our programs to support people to know about death, dying and grief and so on was through support workers and people who live in disability group homes and support workers giving the support. And a lot of service providers out there are really interested in supporting people around their grief and stuff like that. It's important to let family know that one day they won't be around. We do that in other programs too. Currently, we're doing something like My Home, My Plan, where we're talking to people about what supports they need and future living options, just in case one day that they're not living with their family. We talk about things like what emotional supports you might need, what equipment and so on. So it's an ongoing conversation. It's more work to be done. There are examples where things don't quite work out and we need to target some family members too, because there are examples of where family members don't want to bring up issues of dying and a grief. It's an area that they don't want to go there. A lot of families do, but some families don't. One particular person that I interviewed spoke about wanting to see her sister and thought her sister was not talking to her. And this is going for a couple of months. And then when I want to inquire about this and say to house supervisor at the time, what's going on here? This person wants to connect to the sister. The house supervisor mentioned that her sister had passed away and none of the family wanted to bring it up. What's worse, knowing that your sister doesn't want to talk to you or knowing that her sister had passed away and then going through all the grieving process, and of course her rights to know about her sister is really important too. There's a lot of work around that as well, approaching the subject of when a family member or other are grieving, say are dying and stuff like that, and the importance of talking to people with intellectual disability and knowing what it is and how to deal with it. I think it's a difficult one for a lot of people who communicate verbally to express things like grief and understanding of dying and stuff like that. We do our best to explain it. Sometimes people do have family religious or faith beliefs of and about dying and going to heaven and things like that. And it's important to respect what they bring and what they think and how their faith and stuff like that. But it's also it's important to talk about what actually happens when you're dying. So we do have information on what happens to your body, and we talk about the circle of life, and in it also things like, you know, the importance of having a funeral, being part of the funeral.
That was Anthony Rizzoli from Valid, speaking with Powered Media's Emma Myers.